Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. And welcome to the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. And I am Henrietta Byrd, and Glenn Greenidge, of course, is online. I actually thought Glenn was taking the evening off, but he's not, so I'm always thankful when Glenn is around. So welcome, Glenn, and thanks for not taking your break today. How have you been?
Wonderful. Enjoying the good weather.
Mm-hmm.
And been doing a lot of gardening around the community, actually. As well as my own garden. We were doing a cleanup project last week, and it was two weeks ago at Liberty Park. And yesterday we were at Baisley Pond Park doing a cleanup. So, getting the parks ready, getting them ready for our use, our day-to-day use, as the spring is coming. So it's been good. It's good, been good and fun.
Great. It's 65 today, 65 degrees, but the rest of the week has been in the 30s and 40s here. And raining.
Wow.
Yeah, so we went right back to winter. So people who planted on Monday were praying on Tuesday that it just didn't go down to 32 because it was, some people plant on Mother's Day. But it's supposed to stay 55 or 60 for the rest of the week. But this is Chicago, so you never know. But as we begin all of, But as we begin all of our shows, our radio programs, our meetings, the International Black Summit has a declaration. And it's interesting, Glenn, I went to a concert today, and there's this song that a lot of the choir sing in the Chicago area, and it's called I Really Love the Lord. And the soloist who was singing at this particular church, when she introduced the song, she said, this is our church standard. And so when they sing this song, they stand up. And in our church, we sing the song, but it's just one of those songs that's really moving. And when she introduced it, then she started to sing it. And as she started to sing it, she kind of got choked up, and she said, this always happens. And when she said it, it reminded me of the declaration of the International Black Summit, because that's the way the declaration is for me. When we're all together at the annual summit event, or when we're in meetings, when we open the meeting or close the meeting and we gather together, and, like one hand gives and one hand receives in the circle. There's something about the declaration that always chokes me up, because it's such a powerful document. And so as always, I invite everyone, all of our listeners, to go to blacksummit.org and take a look at the declaration. It does not matter what nationality you are. It does not matter what gender you are. It does not matter what your religious beliefs are or your non-religious beliefs. The Declaration is a document for everyone. And you can find yourself in this document, and it will just center you when things might be out of whack, or it just helps you focus. So, that being said, the Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, unity, responsibility, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. Chicago, Illinois, Jamaica, Queens, New York. And this is May 18th, 2014. North, south, east, west, above, below, and within. A moment of silence, please. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And that's it. That's the declaration. You know, there's something about the declaration, and there's something about, like, declaring that we are perfect, that we are whole, that we are complete, that we are whole and complete, you know, that we can step into possibility. The summit has an annual event every year, the first weekend in August. And this year it's in Belize. I'm trying to learn the correct pronunciation because we say Belize, but I hear other people say Belize. But that's where it is. It's the former, I should say, British Honduras. And so we will be there beginning July 30th, 31st. The facilitators come in. And on that Friday, we begin 2014 Annual Summit event, which is the 24th event that we've had. And so we are looking forward to being in Belize, and we invite you to join us. Go to blacksummit.org and register. And it's in your registration that you start your process. There is a prerequisite that has to be experienced. It is a one-day course. And the cost of it is $100 US. And it provides experience for you so that you are prepared to enter the room. And the room is a distinction that we use, which is really a physical space where the annual summit event takes place, which is a conversation. And this is a conversation, the conversation of the International Black Summit. It is not a state of the union. It is not a state of black politics. That's not what it is. It is not, we do not go to other countries. Like, we will not be in Belize determining what things that should be done and beliefs. That's not what this is. This is a self-work. This is a conversation that allows you to bring your vision forth. So we stay together for 3, 4, or 5 days. And depending on if you're a facilitator, if you need to take the prerequisite, or if you begin on Friday, then it's 3 days. And we work on bringing our visions forth, our vision for ourselves and for the Black community. It's a self-work. We do transformation work. We do we release things that are in our way, things that stop us from being productive. We listen to others, and we share our stories so that others can hear and that others can be transformed based on what they hear that life gives us to share. So it's a wonderful, wonderful experience that has been going on now for over 22 years. And we invite you to join us this year in Belize for the 2014 Annual Summit event. Glenn?
All right. So got a lot of information there. It's all about you empowering yourself and moving yourself forward the best way possible. And tonight we're going to be engaging in the conversation of what does Memorial Day mean to you? You know, what is it? Is it just a day off? You know, how? What's the history behind Memorial Day? And we're going to distinguish that, and we've got a couple of invited guests that will be joining us to who happen to be veterans, who will be engaging in the conversation. So, without further ado, we've got a caller on the line, and this may be one of our guests. Also, if you're on the line and like to have your mic be open, just press 1 and we'll recognize you and bring you into the conversation. So right now I'm going to bring in to the conversation area code 210-279. Go ahead, you're live on the air.
Yes, my name is Horace. Hello.
Hi, Horace.
Hey, how you doing here?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining us in the last minute. I really appreciate this. This is Glenn Greenwich in New York, and Glenn, this is Horace, a longtime friend of mine.
Oh, well, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
Just before I ask you a question, I'm going to just give you read a little something first, and then I want to jump right in and have you say what it is for you. I'm reading from the sources, the Office of Public and Intergovernment Affairs, so it's U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and the history behind Memorial Day. 3 years after the Civil War ended on May 5th, 1868, the Heaven Organization of Union Veterans, the Grand Army of Republic, established Decoration Day as a time for the nation to decorate the graves of the war dead with flowers. Major General John A. Logan declared the Decoration Day should be observed on May 30th. It's believed that that date was chosen because flowers would be in bloom all over the country. The first large observance was held that year in Arlington National Cemetery across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. The ceremony centered around the mourning draped veranda of Arlington Mansion, once the home of General E. Lee. Various Washington officials, including General and Mrs. Ulysses S. Grant, presided over the ceremonies. After speeches, children from the soldiers and sailors, orphans home, and members of the GAR made their way through the cemeteries, strewing flowers on both Union and Confederate graves, reciting prayers and singing hymns. So, For me, I must say that I actually did not know the history prior to looking it up. And so I wanted to hear from one who has served this country and put his life on the line. What is Memorial Day for you?
Well, first of all, I appreciate being able to participate in this discussion. I am a veteran. I entered the service in 1967. It's the Vietnam era. Served in the Air Force at that particular time. Then I came out for a little bit, got into the Army National Guard. And being in the Army National Guard, I had an opportunity also to go to Bosnia and to Iraq. That summed up a 33-year commitment. I've had many friends in the military. I've lost many friends in the military. Decoration Day, which it used to be called and designated as, is more of a thing that people should relate to than just plain Veterans Day. I think that cemeteries should acknowledge it with the decorating of the graves, not necessarily those individuals, but the emphasis, I think, with Decoration Day has more meaning, and it gives the public an idea of what should be done besides just a day off and kickback and things like that.
That's very interesting that you said that, because, you know, in looking into this, one of the things that had me be conscious of is that there is a difference. So Veterans Day, and let me ask you if this is how it lands for you, but the thought crossed my mind that Veterans Day was for the folks who are still alive, and Memorial Day would be the day for the veterans who've given their life so that we can have the freedom that we have.
That may very well be. Nevertheless, veterans are involved. You always hope you can become a veteran. I don't think that the acknowledgement of the day is like it used to be or should be, especially
okay.
Today. I touch on current events. Veterans are in the news very much so these days. I'm sure you're aware of the current situation going on in Washington concerning our veterans. And I think it's ironic that this day should occur at this time frame.
So say a little bit more for those who may not be aware or not up on the details.
Yeah, current details of the veterans today?
Yes.
I'm speaking of the fact that the Veterans Administration, that one of its branches are the hospitals. The hospitals, there's a conspiracy going around that the Veterans Administration is not they're not attending to the veterans as they should. They've
yes.
been involved with, they've been involved with, cooking the books, if you might, is so to speak, just to pass inspections from Washington. Some administrators in each hospital, Hines Hospital, the hospital in Phoenix, I'm sure there are a list more as this investigation goes on, but it all comes down to the fact that veterans are not being honored as they should be.
When I look around, we've had St. Albans Naval Hospital here in Queens, and there's been so much talk about it being closed down and creating a clinic rather than a full service hospital. And when you look around to other parts around the tri-state area, this conversation is prevalent, and veterans are being asked to travel further and further to get the services that they should be getting. And, you know, it really is a travesty when you think about it, that you can go put your life on the line, get injured, and then have to wait 7, 8 months and longer just to know, to find out if you're going to get served, which is pretty ridiculous when you're putting your life on the line.
Yeah, that's you're absolutely right. Actually, these veterans, they have, I know my wife has been involved with time periods that I'm away from home. Like I said, Bosnia, I had the soldiers there. I didn't mind going, but it causes hardships. What I'm trying to say, it causes hardships not only the veteran, but the veteran's families as well.
Sure.
You miss birthdays,
sure.
Miss prominent holidays. It's just not equaling out as it, you know, theoretically should.
Well, as a veteran, let me ask you this. So certainly the benefits need to be turned around, and something has got to be done, absolutely has got to be done about that. But when you look at Memorial Day itself, what do you think should be the prime activities or at least more attention that we as individuals who have not participated in war zones, what do you think that we can do to honor those who have given their lives to provide us freedom?
Well, personally, I think that awareness, and then awareness. And by that I mean the various types of medias, television, radio. There are people that don't even know what veterans are. You know, the younger generation doesn't realize what has taken place to have them in the position that they are now.
Mm-hmm.
If there were more awareness going on, that would certainly please me. I'm sure other veterans out there would say the same. There are numerous ways that could be carried out. That's what this soldier says.
Okay. Great. Well, go ahead, Henrietta.
That's interesting, you know, Horace, because I was just thinking about that when I was listening to you, like someone who doesn't know what a veteran is. That's like foreign to me, but I'm sure there are plenty of people who don't, you know. And I was just, you know, I just went there, like, does my daughter know what a veteran is? Well, I'm sure she does, you know. But how did she find out about it? But, you know, she grew up in a time of war, so, but will the, you know, like, how do we do that? How do we let the children know that part of the reason that they are safe are because of people who voluntarily given their lives and their families have sacrificed the things that, you know, you were mentioning about your wife and your family, you know, having sacrificed and, you know, missing the birthdays, missing the holidays and those kinds of things. And then to come out and not be able to have the kind of health care that affordable health care, I'll say. You know, that's really something. That's really something. And when I look at all of the, like in Chicago, the two things that are plentiful in Chicago are hospitals and universities. They're building just all kinds of hospitals, new additions and that kind of thing, but they're not for veterans. All right? They are not for veterans. They're private sector, you know. And I'm thinking of all of the endowments and all of the money that's being left. They're not people that are leaving money to build veterans' hospitals. You know, not that I know of. Let me say it that way. And it seems as though that would be something that people could do, you know, with you know, people who have that kind of money. So that's really something to think about, and that's really something, a project to take on. You know, there's a group at church that does projects, and they find projects to do, and I'm going to make a suggestion that they look into doing something for veterans, medical, you know, in support of veterans on the healthcare tip. So thank you. Thank you for bringing that up.
No problem here. I was also thinking, I'm not sure how much of what part of the school system actually talks about veterans. I know that that was not existing when we were in school, but back to awareness again, to let people know who the veterans are around them and what a veteran is and the part that they play in this country.
You know, you're absolutely right. I'm very sensitive to this because a little while ago, about a week ago, one of my close friends' father passed away, and I knew that he was a veteran because on Veterans Day he would always put on his uniform. This was a man who was in his 80s, mid-80s, and he served both in Korea and Vietnam. And, of course, I didn't know this until his funeral, but had been awarded 18 medals in that time period. You know, so this whole conversation about awareness and, you know, what is it that we tell our children about being a veteran and, you know, who are the veterans and what they did to preserve the rights that we have in this country. You know, without our veterans, we might have been speaking German. You know, and I mean, you know, it's kind of a ha ha, but really, we might have been speaking German. You know, when you look back at history and look back at, you know, how things have taken place. So it's a very important, not only that they talk about the wars, but talk about the, you know, what took place. You know, one of the things that I've enjoyed watching, you know, I watch the History Channel, and, you know, when I hear about Patton, General Patton, and some of the things that he did and his personality and how there are things that he did that were outside of the nine dots. But he's not alone. You know, you can look back at the Civil War as well. So, I mean, I'm sure all the wars, they had significant things that were turning points and that there were personalities in those wars that made a difference and have altered history such that the history that we have today would not be here without those personalities and those decisions that they made.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's very interesting. I was I'm glued to the television on the history events because there's so much that we weren't taught, didn't know about. I'll give you a quick for instance. I'm living in Corpus Christi, Texas right now, and when I came to Texas in 1988, I was astounded by the other holidays and the Texas history that us Northerners didn't even know about. The Six Flags, what they meant. There's a couple of other, Juneteenth. You know, these are holidays that we didn't even know about up north.
Yes.
The school system again.
Yes.
Do you recall anything? Can you relate to that, sir?
No, I was saying Juneteenth. That's something that to be, you know, it's shameful to say, but I heard about it for the first time in the last 4 or 5 years. Didn't even know what it was about or you know, the significance of it. So you're right. There are a lot of things. I mean, you know, when you look at Texas and you look at the whole conversation of them being annexed and the whole controversy around slavery back then, you know, and the Mexicans, you know, and their contribution and what all that they were about. So, I mean, you know, there are quite a few things that have to be that unless you look into the history books, you really won't know about it. You just won't know about it. And it's critical to our history.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Absolutely.
Glenn.
This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we're coming to you live every Sunday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We want to also let you know to take a look at our website, www.blacksummit.org, for any information about upcoming events. Henrietta talked a little earlier about the annual event that's going to be in Belize, and we also have some other events inside of the U.S., summer shares and prerequisites. So those are the two things. We also have another caller that I'm going to bring into call, but go ahead. You're going to say something, Andrea?
Right. I was going to say I really wanted you to hear, and I wanted the listeners to hear a little bit more about the work that Horace did while he was in the military, you know, over the course of, you know, the different tours and things that he had. He did some real interesting work, you know, that I would hear about from time to time. And one of the things that I found so interesting was something you shared, of course, one time about what you would, how you would see people off to the war, people who were leaving, you know. And I don't know. There's something that's like really important about that, and how you get to be the one that sees people off. You know, it appears to me that you have to be of a certain mindset or a certain consciousness in order to do that, you know, to make people comfortable. But we're talking about tonight, we're actually talking about Memorial Day and how it celebrated and how we celebrate it or how a veteran sees Memorial Day. But there's something, you know, like about being a veteran that I think there's so much more to understanding what it really means. You know, it's like, you know, we know people join the military and they may not go to a war zone, and then they come back and they have to find jobs and have to adjust to regular life. But there was a point, Horace, that you shared about how you would see people who were going to the war. Could you share a little bit about that with our listeners?
Well, it's nothing that you really, no one really looks forward to. However, you're trained up to do that. Anyone in the military, whether you're a cook or a clerk or a mechanic, everyone is trained to take out the other guy. As Patton said, it's you or him, you know. But my job in the military was pretty much out front. I was involved with aviation. Aviation is a course I took when I was attending Chicago Vocational School. And I took that knowledge with me into the military and the Air Force. When I got into the Army, I went into more of an aviation turn. I was involved with aircraft instead of engines as I was in the Air Force. But being involved with aircraft, I was a crew chief, a technician, an inspector. All these things contributed to a career that I thought was pretty good, considering their ups and downs and everything. I today still enjoy flying. It's a sensation that you never get tired of. Being in the National Guard, however, takes on a different aspect. You rescue people during floods. We have the fire season right behind the flood season. And then there's many things that helicopters can do. The helicopter that I was involved with was the UH-60, the Blackhawk. And that bird can be transferred into many different things. It could be a medevac. It could be put a bucket under to drop water on fires. There's many things. There's a multiple utility type of aircraft. As far as seeing people off to war, I got to know a lot of people. You address a lot of people. Once you become a non-commissioned officer, you're in charge of actually talking to people, become more of a spokesman, and you can actually, by just talking to someone, energize them and get them ready for what's about to happen. I found myself at Fort Hood several times doing that after I went through the experience myself. And it was a comfort to see a soldier smile and go ahead to take care of business.
Excellent. Let me bring this listener on.
Okay, that's a different kind of motivational speaker, Glenn.
Absolutely. We've got a list of 404-964. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Jill. How are you?
Hey, Jill.
Hi, Jill.
Hi. My question was actually in regards to telling of the stories. I think that I feel that that's what's missing a lot with storytelling within our community as far as with the vets have been through, what our great grandparents have been through, and so that's when you asked him, Henry had asked Mr. Horace to go ahead and tell a little bit about the story. That's kind of what I wanted to hear, because the storytelling I just feel is what's missing, and that's why a lot of maybe this generation they don't really know the importance or the significance of that. And then in regards to what we see on TV, it just seems like there's a level of disrespect. I was watching this show on 60 Minutes a couple of years ago, and this father was really upset. His son came home from the war, and he needed, of course, medical treatment. But the best doctors were not in the hospitals where the vets were going. He had to go to some hospital outside of somewhere in Maryland. He had to go to some hospital that was not a hospital for the vets in order for his son to receive rehab. And it was this big thing on 60 Minutes. I was trying to pull it up before I was put on the call. But it's just what we see now is just, as far as what's going on with the documentation, with the hospitals, it just seems like there's a level of disrespect out there. So I think the stories are really significant and important.
Excellent.
And that's all I wanted to share. And thank you so much, Mr. Horace, for being on here. And you know, this is great. It's a great show. I have a real passion for our vets as a social worker. So thank you.
Thank you, Gio. Thank you. Thank you for joining us tonight. There's another caller. Glenn, is there another caller on?
Yeah, there are actually two other callers that are pressed their attention, but let me bring the next one on. 773-424, go ahead, you're live on the air. You got a question?
Hi, yeah, this is Brenda, Henrietta, and Horace. Hello.
Hey, Glenn.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you guys hear me clearly?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. Actually, I've known Horace and Henrietta all my life, and at first I was just listening just to see exactly what, you know, was going to be said. But my thing about, I guess Jill mentioned something about the stories, but what has to be understood, in my opinion, is that a lot of the actions and a lot of the things that go on with the military are so classified that, you know, we as normal walking pedestrians would have no clue as to the spirits that are actually floating around out there in the desert and Vietnam where our brothers and, you know, where we made all these little babies and whatnot. There's so many things that went on that we would never know. I mean, as Horace could never tell us about all of the things that he experienced, you know, lifting people out from Hurricane Katrina and going behind the lines, working on aircrafts over in Saudi Arabia and all these different places that he's been. You know, I look at the spiritual aspect in stating that, you know, when you take in all of these spirits, you know, we are dealing with spiritual warfare on a daily basis, and there's no way that our physical weapons could even possibly tell you exactly what something like that would be like. You know, I mean, I can see Horace's eyes right now, you know, the cold stares and the laughter that he probably did because he has a lot of humor. And, you know, it takes a lot of guts to make a person laugh before they could be possibly going to their death. You know, so I definitely commend him. I would also like to say that during that Vietnam War, our neighborhood experienced so many of our friends that were being drafted, because they don't do the draft. I mean, at least I don't know anything about if they do it or not, but
they're not drafting anymore.
And my brother and my friends, my boyfriend, my cousins, my whole neighborhood was either drafted in the Army, and because they were like, well, I don't want to go in the Army because I don't want to be on the front line, so I'll go to the Air Force, so I don't want to go there because I'll go to the Navy. And I mean, they all went away. Everybody went.
Yeah.
Maybe one person.
Everybody.
And they went out.
Yeah, yes, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could not help but join in on the call. I wanted to listen, but it was just that the spirit just told me, say, you know, you got to join in on this call because we actually lived through all of that, you know, the crying, the letter writing, the
right.
The coming home on leave, sneaking on the military bases. We did all of it. I'm just glad that, you know, the majority of them did survive, you know.
Thanks, Brenda.
I just want to let our one other listener. We're going to get to you in a second. But I had a question for you, Horace. Given, you know, the things that were just brought up, one of the things that I remember, and again, I've never been a vet and haven't gone to war, et cetera, but one of the things that I heard very frequently from my friends that when they came back from Vietnam, they were shunned because they didn't win the war. Has that changed any for some of the other wars, the Iraq War and some of the other wars since the Vietnam War?
Yes, indeed, it has changed. It seems like today, when it's found out that you're a veteran, immediately the person will say, thanks for your service. Thanks for your service, okay. And we appreciate you. And it's a change of the complexion that it used to be back in the 70s. We didn't win the war, and I guess they were taking it out on us, but there was a lot of disparity going on at that particular time, and we weren't the most loved people in the world at home here. But I'm here to say that has changed, and that's good. It makes it worthwhile. And if someone would approach me that, I would tell them, you know, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it, and you're the main reason that I was there serving.
Yeah.
I return the gesture.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let me say one more thing, and I'm gonna not say anything else. This is Brenda again. My dad and my uncle, who are still living, are both World War II veterans. Mm.
That's right.
I take them often to the Jesse Brown VA Center here in Chicago, and that is exactly what they do. Not only do they thank them for their service, they have children that make them cards. And it's not just, it's for any veteran that walks into the VA center, even myself who had a torn meniscus. They thought I was a veteran, and they were, you know, so walking up to me, helping me, put me in a wheelchair. Well, I'm not a veteran. Well, we'll help you anyway, you know. But they have children to do cards for them at Christmas time, at Father's Day, at, you know, all different times of year, and he's absolutely right. It has changed, but it you know, and now during the Vietnam War, of course, that was during the time when the whole world was changing revolutionarily, in that, you know, we were trying to end the war in Vietnam, but it wasn't about ending or winning the war in Vietnam. They had a hidden agenda with that war. So, therefore, which I'm sure they have with most wars, but that particular war, there was definitely a hidden agenda going on there. So,
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, let me bring out another caller. Caller 253-740, go ahead, you're live on the air.
Hello, my name is Lloyd Dow.
Oh, my goodness.
Welcome to the call. Thank you. I am a childhood friend of Horace, Brenda, and Henrietta. I haven't seen Horace in probably about 40 years. Horace, I haven't seen you since 1967, 1967.
How you doing, Jerry? How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. So I'm a veteran also, Horace, and I want to thank you for your service. I had no idea that you had been involved in all of the wars since Vietnam. So my question
Thank you very much.
What was it like for a black man in the Vietnam War from your perspective?
There was discrimination. There was definitely discrimination, even in a high-profile organization like the Air Force. At the time I went in 1967, Does anybody out there remember
1967? But, yeah.
All right, but and the time that I went in, okay, that it was August, and at that same particular time there was a riots going on in Detroit, Michigan, and I took basic training in San Antonio, Texas, which is about 2 hours from here, and the instructors were, you know, they asked everybody where they're from, where are you from, and when I told them that I was from Chicago, next door neighbors to Detroit, then I was a target for numerous things that I've not talked about here on the public radio, but there was a lot of discrimination. But we all seemed to join together to get the job done. But you had to remember that you were a certain, you know, keep your place, put it like that.
Well, you know, when you say that, one of the things that comes to mind for me is that I got to say that maybe it's about 15 or 20 years ago. You know what it was? It was around 9/11. 9/11 that happened here in New York. And one of the things that this older veteran had said to me, and I don't recall what, I believe he was a Vietnam vet, but I'm not sure. He was either Korean or Vietnam. I'm not real clear. And one of the things that he said was, yeah, everybody's all hyped up and friendly and all that now, as opposed, you know, post 9/11, he says, but in the end, you know, you're still a black man. And that's how he felt when he got back from the war and when he was looking for a job, even though he had served this country and you know, laid it on the line and lost a lot of buddies and so on and so forth. The reality of coming back to the country was that he was still a black man, bottom line.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. That's very true. Being aware of that and that actually happened is two different things. But it did happen like that.
Yeah. We've got about 5 minutes left, so go ahead. Back to you, Henrietta.
Can we extend the time just a few minutes? Because I want to get some communication with Lloyd, who just joined us. Please. Lloyd, this is, and I didn't introduce you, Glenn, my co-host, and we co-host together. Glenn Lloyd joined us from Seattle or the Seattle area. Brenda is in Chicago. Jill, everybody, is one of our former hosts of the show, who's joining us from, no, where is she? In New Hampshire, I think. She's in New Hampshire now. So just so everybody knows everybody. But Lloyd was in the Navy, and I would really like to hear from you, because I have a nephew who recently got out of the Navy, and I guess it's been maybe two years ago. He's had a wonderful experience as far as finding jobs.
Wow.
It's real interesting. I mean, just a wonderful experience. Had four, you know, choices, like really great choices in where he would work based on what he did, you know, when he was in the service. And so I was just wondering, like, is it different? Like, is it different now? Or Lloyd, is it based on what you did on the ship as to what kind
I think it's like night and day.
Excuse me, the submarine, not the ship, but on the submarine.
Hmm?
I mean on the submarine, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, the Navy today, Army, Air Force, Marines, is a lot different than it was back in of the 60s when Horace and I was in the service. Discrimination, yes, a lot of discrimination. There was discrimination in boot camp. I was given a nickname. I was carrying the flag, you know, for the company, and I was called the Greyhound. I know another brother that was carrying the flag for another company, and they called him Snowball. So night and day,
yeah.
All volunteer service today. Back then, like Brenda was saying, we were drafted, but we didn't have a choice. Especially once you got your draft card, you know, you didn't really have a choice because they said you were drafted into the Army. But in terms of opportunities, I think the opportunities are a lot more today for a person getting out of the service because they have a lot of training in different fields, so they come out with a lot of knowledge. And
yeah.
Having said that, I want to go back just a little bit. When in the all-volunteer Army and the Air Force and Navy, you have to take a test now just to be accepted into the military. Back then, they didn't care. You know, and especially if you were a black man, you was put on the front line if you joined the Army. And you know what I'm saying? So when you say if there's a difference, yes, there is. There's a lot more training today. Very little training back then. You know, pretty much if you were in the Army, you ended up with a rifle in your hand. You ended up on the front line somewhere in a rice paddy over in Vietnam. So it's like night and day. I think that... for the most part, as far as discrimination is concerned, I think people are a little bit more accepting, a little bit more educated.
But it's still alive and well.
Right.
So, Lori, let me ask you the question that we asked Horace earlier. Like, what is Memorial Day for you? Like, connect with being in the military?
Most of the people around me, you know, they're not thinking about that as a day to honor veterans. They're thinking about it as a holiday. For me, it's a day that I celebrate to, one, remember those veterans who have died in all of the wars. Great sacrifice, especially for us as black men, because we fought in those wars to be accepted. We thought that we'd come back home and be accepted as first-class citizens. But many of us found out that that wasn't the case when we returned home. So in spite of all of that, I still have a great respect for those that fought on the front lines. I didn't because, like Horace, I was in aviation. I was an aircraft mechanic. I was on a couple of carriers. I really never saw any kind of combat. You know, I was in Vietnam, in Da Nang one night, and that was it for me. But back to your question, it's a day to honor all of the African-American men who died for this country. And we can go way back to the Civil War, to World War I, to World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam War, and all the wars since. So my hat's off to all of those men who fought in the wars. And you know what I'm saying? Black, white. That's what it means to me.
Mm-hmm. And female.
And female.
Well said, right. Well said.
All right
now.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay.
This is really, really nice, and we have to meet like this again.
All
right.
Really meet like this again. Thank you all so much for calling in, Glenn. Thank you, Gio and Brenda. Thank you so much.
Okay.
I would love to get your father, get Mr. Howard and
wow.
Uncle Morrell, and let them talk about their experience one time. But
wow.
maybe we'll continue this conversation next week because we are leading up to, you know, the holiday, the Memorial Day holiday. So thank you all again. Glenn.
Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you for the opportunity to participate.
Yeah.
And to all my friends out there in different parts of the country, have a good day. Have a good day.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. You know,
thank you all.
All right.
We thank you, and we honor you for the work and the service that you've done, and that we who have remained behind get to live in a space, in an environment, in a world that you have provided for us. So I want to thank you for the work that you've done, that you continue to do, that unfortunately you're not acknowledged enough for, the bravery and the diligence, because you laid it on the line for us. So I just want to really thank you for your service, and thank you for having me have the life that I have.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that.
You're very welcome, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Definitely. I just, you know, Brenda, I wanted to just share this because Brenda made me, she just kind of, this triggered it for me, but we had a little tradition in the neighborhood that whenever somebody would join the military or they would be drafted, we would get together and go to the park, you know, the night before they left. And it was like a ritual, you know, it was like a rites of passage or something. But, you know, I never really realized like how hard that was, you know. Like Brenda said, our entire neighborhood, and every week, it seemed like every week or twice a month or whatever, somebody was leaving, you know, could you mute your phone, please? Could you mute your phone, please? Thank you. But, it's something to go through that week after week after week. And, I you know, you've heard me say, Glenn, that I used to write 11 letters every week to people, you know, in our neighborhood and stuff. And so, and I never really realized, like, what, you know, like the effect of it. And so, I don't even think I could be conscious of what the possibility was when they were leaving. You know, I don't think I could even have that in my consciousness because I wouldn't have been able to handle it. It was just, you know, we would try to celebrate them before they left. You know,
do you remember that song they made, The Boys of Vietnam?
I remember that song.
You remember that, Jerry? A letter has come.
I remember it.
Y'all want me to sing it?
That's back in the day.
Oh, Vietnam.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
One line.
Do you want to remember that? I don't know. Yeah, but
a letter has come.
Oh, a letter, yeah.
A letter has come.
Yeah. It's kind of coming back, but yeah. So thank you all. Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. I didn't have a number for Clifford. I was listening.
Oh, wow.
I had a number for Clifton Pierce, but I didn't have one for Clifford Howard. So that's, you know, the reason I didn't get him. But like I said, we can definitely do it again. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right.
Well, thank you.
Okay, then.
All right. Good night.
Right.
God bless.
Right. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Out.